I've been interested in crime and punishment and murder and things like that for quite a long time. I started doing some work as part of my honours courses in the mid-1980s, and I remember one bloke I looked at was a guy called Tillett of Fielding. I can't remember his first name, but he was a member of the Communist Party during the 1930s Depression, and he used to trundle around Fielding and Palmerston North breaking up various government offices and petitioning for charitable aid for him and his family, and I rather loved Tillett of Fielding. And then I went on to do some master's work on a girls' reformatory home in Christchurch, and there's some great characters there. One I still remember, this is the home operated from around 1900 to around 1918. This fabulous woman called Angelina Bliss, who was a Belgian tightrope walker. And I just thought, what a great name and what a great thing to do. God knows why she ended up in this reformatory. Then I went on to do a PhD in women's imprisonment in New Zealand, and I found a whole lot of women who'd spent a lot of time in prison. A favourite one that I looked at was a woman called Margaret Williams, alias Opium Mag, and she'd come to Otago in the 1860s and worked her way around the South Island as a prostitute, as a drunkard, and as an opium addict. And by the time she'd finished her long career, she'd had 240 convictions and had been in prison numerous, numerous times. Sort of, she was still on the game in her 60s, so she was clearly making a living from this type of stuff. And I became, once I finished that, I became interested in issues to do with gender relations and city life and prostitution and crime and how people talked about all of these things and reported it all, and interested in stories of murder and child murder and women being kidnapped and sold into sexual slavery and baby farming and the like. And when I started doing this work, I argued, and you might find this in some of the stuff that you read, that these things, crime was talked about as deviance, that they were useful because they highlighted what was seen as normal in any society. So if you think of something like murder, it's a crime, and it's a really obvious one because we obviously don't want people running around murdering other people. We'd rather our normal state was one of peace and goodwill. So that's a really obvious thing where we say this is murder, the opposite is what we want. So that's showing something which is deviant and wrong in society. But there's a lot that's really murky around the edges. And what we think of as criminal and wrong has changed a lot over time. And I'm sure you've all heard of that thing called the Bloody Code in 18th century England, when there was a whole lot of stuff which was designated as a capital offence, something which you could be liable to be executed for, although many people were not. And really, really little things that could bring a sentence of death. Things like impersonating a Chelsea pensioner, interfering with the Westminster Bridge in London, and going around with a blackened face at night in London could all lead to execution. So small things being penalised in a really big way. So that's then, but even now it's really quite murky. And if you think of something like child abuse, there's a big debate still about that anti-smacking legislation. Some people saying it's okay to hit your kid, other people saying no, this is a criminal offence, which is what the law says as well. So for a lot of our history, how parents discipline their children has been subject more to moral codes than to the law. But society and how things we think of as crime change at the same time together. And concepts of things like what's crime and what's wrong not only change over time, but they tend to be an external view. So those who are involved in this type of stuff don't necessarily see it as being a criminal offence. So if you think about women who worked as prostitutes now and in the 19th century, they didn't necessarily think that what they were doing was a criminal offence, it was just a way of life. So I say all of that just to get you thinking a little bit about how some of these things are very much about what we deem them to be now and what they have been deemed to be at the time. So what I'm going to do today is talk just about a couple of murder cases, child murder cases, and then look outwards from them to see what they can mean about society in general. I'm sure Steve did a little bit of this when he talked about the Maungatapu murders as well. And it's an approach to history called microhistory, which has been made popular by an Italian historian in particular called Carlo Ginzburg, who did a lot of stuff on witchcraft trials. And the social history of crime, if you're interested in this, does it a lot. They take one case and use it as a focus to read outwards about some bigger things happening in society. And if you're familiar with the work of Miles Fairbairn in New Zealand, he's done a little bit of this as well. I think he calls it ethnohistory, some other term, but microhistory is the term I use and the type of stuff I do. So I think collectively, historians of New Zealand have really presented New Zealand history as sort of the equivalent of a historical health food, something that may not taste good, but it's really good for you. And we've worried a lot about firsts. We like to be first. We like to let others know that we were there. So if you read some of our literature on the First World War, you would have thought that single-handedly that it was a lot down to us what happened in the First World War on the Western Front. That was us, no one else. We like to show that New Zealanders were good at things. We like to show we were first. You know, someone's got to be first, but somehow we need to say that we were the ones doing it. And in the process of doing all of this, I think we've painted quite an earnest picture of ourselves in the past. And sometimes you can be a little bit earnest and serious and people get turned off by that. Or worse, you don't even get excited about our history. So the types of things that Jamie is saying, I think are really, really important. Trying to get a different spin on our history, really. And we've got a huge interest in New Zealand's past, and I'm really keen on seeing people capitalise on that. So my own research on crime and sexuality is this a way of trying to explore that dark side of the past, partly as a counter to all that pious, boring stuff that we get, and to show that things weren't boring, and to find out about characters and people living on the edge, really, to look at our villains as well as our good people, and really part of a broader aim of getting people interested in our past in the round. And this is the last thing I'm going to say before I get on to these two cases, but it's also a way of looking at some really ordinary, everyday dramas in people's lives and to see them played out on a big public stage, to see people simply trying to get on in their communities and dealing with the things that really can knock them for six when they happen, dealing with shame and social scandal and the troubles of not being seen as respectable, which was really, really big in the 19th century and all that entailed.